Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to this last leg of Thursday Live coming to you from the studios of Radio Sai. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu. The month of November has begun, the most significant month for Sai devotees. Soon the festivities would begin to mark the 91st birthday celebrations of our beloved Bhagwan. It's 5 years since we miss the delectable physical form of our Lord. Miss those birthday morning moments when we saw him emerge from his abode in a glistening and sparkling white robe. Miss those ethereal moments when he was on the stage on a majestic throne, and how he relished the song sung by the students. He was so much in bliss, so happy to see so many, and so many were so happy to see him, just to be with him, just to be in that space. They just lost themselves in the eternal bliss of knowing him, of loving him, of offering themselves to him. How powerful those birthday mornings were. And of course, the two most glorious birthdays ever were the 83rd birthday and the 85th birthday. Both amazingly historical moments in the saga of the Satya Sai Avatar, when the Lord appeared in the huge Hillview Stadium on the golden chariot, when the ocean of pure love was encased in a vial of supreme splendor, and voila, you set a million seeking hearts aflutter. The chemistry of that moment was sheer magic, and the memory of that moment is simply spectacular. When the 7-horse-driven golden and glistening divine vehicle glided into the large concourse of thirsting devotees, the sublime euphoria that enveloped the entire assembly was hard to describe. The moment was spellbinding. It was magical. Every face in the crowd spoke a volume in silence. There were tears streaming down copiously on some faces. If you look at those pictures of the 83rd birthday morning when Bhagwan came on the golden chariot, there were a few others who seemed transfixed, as if temporarily transported to some other realm. There were some who were so much in awe that they just gazed with big eyes and open mouths, their palms pressed on their cheeks. There were others who were just ecstatic. Big smiles sported their lips. They only wanted to savor every second to that maximum. There were a few others who were probably new to Baba, so they were amazed and they seemed to try to fathom the enigma of his divine occurrence. Some had become statues of humility with folded hands and head bowed in deep reverence. They had no clue how else to accept this remarkable blessing that Bhagwan was showering on that morning. There were hundreds who were simply jubilant. They just waved their hands in overflowing joy and embraced themselves as if enveloping their being with that sanctifying air of divine benevolence. There were yet others who were just motionless. They were just in bliss. At times, you could see a tear or two slowly coursing down their cheeks. How can one translate in letters an experience that is so overpowering, so intense, so deeply moving? And everyone experiences in their own way, in their own unique way. And as the Lord, adorned in sublime yellow and enthroned on that luminous vehicle, smiled generously and blessed copiously, his hand often raised in loving benediction, there was not a single soul in the stadium whose heart was not stirred by the splendor of Sai. And to add to the grandeur and excitement of the occasion, The chariot was led by the elegant and agile Satyagita, Bhagwan's tiny pet elephant then. And she was followed by the university brass band adding scintillating music to the sacred morning. Behind this was the elaborate procession of students attired in red and vociferously chanting Vedic hymns. At the same time, the huge speakers stacked at various strategic points in the ground sprung into action, belting out lovely compositions specially created for the event. Music and poetry have it in them to express deep emotions of the heart with more ease and with more clarity than prose and words. And music did it to a beautiful extent that morning. And one of the songs written in Telugu captured the beauty of that morning's event so wonderfully. It was such a magnificent song, so perfect for that setting when Bhagwan glided into the Hillview Stadium and glided into the hearts of the thousands who were just lost at that golden splendor.
Kalati Talila Murti Kali Yuga Chakravarti Tribhuvana Vandita Divya Kirti Diganta Vyapta Tejo Diti
Pavitra Pate Tasya Tasya Te Pavitra Pate Pavitra Pate Te Tasya Tasya Te Pavitra Pate చేరినాము ఈ మధుర క్షణము కోసము మేము ఎంతో వేచినాము మా అంతరంగముల ఉప్పొంగినది ఆనంద సాగరం ఈ చారిత్రాత్మక ఘటనము చూచే జన్మలే చరితార్థం స్వర్ణ రథముపై పయని సత్యసాయి దేవా స్వర్ణ రథముపై పయనించే సత్యసాయి
ఆదరించగా అవతరించినావు సహస్ర చంద్ర దర్శనముతో సంతోషమందించినావు సకల జగులను సంరక్షించగా సాక్షాత్కరించినావు దాస జనులపై జయనే చూపి ధన్యులే చేసేవు స్వర్ణ రథముపై పయనించే సత్య సాయి దేవా
Wasn't that something amazing? So this is what was going on when Bhagwan was coming on the golden chariot on the morning of his 83rd birthday. And if you ruminate on the meaning of this Telugu song, it begins with, "Oh, the timeless, most mysterious and the magnificent one. O King of Kings, the Supreme Lord of Kali, O brilliant being, superlatively illustrious and adored in all the three worlds of this universe, O the highly resplendent one whose radiance spans this entire creation, spares none. Behold, delight in his scintillating sacred sight, enthroned on the golden chariot is the celestial Lord Sai. Every speck of nature around is as if rejuvenated, one glimpse of his glorious aura, and each being on earth feels so liberated. Truly, you are the ever-shining sun, the thousand-petaled illumining light of our lives. You are our most beautiful moon too, so pure, so serene, so soothing, so moving, ever new and so full of bliss, eternal. In scores and thousands from every corner of the globe, we have gathered with thrill, with eager expectation and joy to savor you with our eyes, dear Lord, our heartthrob. How long have we pined for this momentous morning? How much have we prayed and penanced for this purifying present? Springs of ecstasy welling from within have enveloped our entire being, witnessing this spectacle, this divine spectacle, unprecedented and absolutely outstanding. Our lives have found fulfillment. Our existence has found meaning. Purely for our sake, you have descended on this planet to regale us and to redeem us. This is why you have come again. But with this one stupefying manifestation of your glory, the cups of our souls are now overflowing. O Lord, the caring caretaker of this entire creation, by this one splendid gift, you have blessed us with the utmost joy of divine communion, elevating us to ethereal heights, elevating us to divine excitement and delectable delight. You have sanctified us. We have seen paradise." That is what is so amazingly, beautifully conveyed in this song, "Swarna Ratham Pai Pai Ninche." I remember speaking to a devotee from Croatia, Ziko Galic, who was part of the 83rd birthday celebrations and who was sitting in the gents' gallery and watching the events unfolding that morning. And when I asked him, "How is your experience, Mr. Galic?" he said, "I don't know why, but the moment I saw Swami that morning, I just began to cry profusely. My heart just opened up completely. The entire stadium was so suffused with God energy. He is definitely the King. He is the divine come again. In his resplendent yellow, he was truly Lord Krishna. There was so much of love around. I was completely drowned in that sea of divine love. For me, the Lord arriving on the golden chariot is definitely the holy harbinger of the golden age that is soon to come. I did not have a good childhood, but now Swami is my better than the best friend. He's my father, he's my mother, he's my life, he's my God. He has made me anew. He's so sweet and soft. Apparently, so much like any of us, but within him is the infinite reservoir of divine love and powerful energy. I feel so charged, so much in bliss. I do not know how to express. And as he was saying this, Mr. Galik now just closed his eyes, and for the next few seconds, you know, he just relived those soul-filling moments. And when he was out of his reverie, he was still speechless. Well, that is how powerful that moment was for those who were present. And that is how the avatar of the age has touched the hearts of millions and continues to do so. And this glorious saga of the Satya Sai avatar started in this month 91 years ago in a simple, humble hamlet tucked away in a remote corner of Andhra Pradesh. At that time, as someone later described Puttaparthi, the hamlet was just two lanes roughly at right angles around which were clustered an assorted collection of mud huts plus a few brick and mortar houses. The population was around probably 200, and the hamlet was located not far from the Chitravati River, which carried little water except during the rainy season. There was no direct road leading to the hamlet. To reach it, one had to first come to a village called Karnataka Nagepalli on the other side of the river, and then cross the river either by a bullock cart or just walk across the sand and wade through the water, if there was any. And the region was generally dry and arid, with many hills largely covered with scrub forest. The river flowed in a valley among the hills. British records going back nearly 150 years note that Puttaparthi was on an elephant migration path from a region northwest to a region southeast. Probably the river was a watering hole for the elephants. As late as 1940s, visitors to Puttaparthi reported occasionally seeing cheetahs drinking water in the river. In fact, there exists to this day in the scrub forest an old building known as the Inspection Bungalow. During the British days, it served as a resting place for forest officials on inspection duty. So this is what Puttaparthi was in the 1930s, in the 1920s, 1940s. And the Lord of the Universe chose such a setting to be born and to live like a human being, to undergo all the trials and tribulations that a person in the lowest rung of the society goes through. And that is the reason why when Bhagwan says, "My life is my message," it is so powerful, because everything that he asks us to do, he has indeed done it himself. Everything that he asks us to practice, he has indeed practiced himself. And in this hour of outside, inside, deep inside, let us ruminate on one or two powerful lessons that the Lord taught us through the event of just his birth. The month of November has begun, and it is definitely a month for us to reevaluate ourselves and re-energize our efforts on the spiritual path. And the best way to do it is to look at Bhagwan's life, internalize those lessons, and then experience those lessons in real action. So that is what we will do tonight. We will take one or two aspects of Bhagwan's birth and ruminate over them in the next 45 minutes or so.
Tune to Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside Deep Inside. I'm Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and the time in the studios now is 8:59, and this hour we're going to reflect on the divine advent of the Satya Sai Avatar. We know the story. Ishwaramma was a pious girl. She was born soon after her father, Sri Subbaraju, a great devotee of Lord Shiva, constructed a Shiva temple in his village. And as was the custom in those days, at an early age she was married to Sri Pedda Venkamma Garu. Even though she was as young as 15, she was smart and she was matured enough to handle the household duties and responsibilities with great elan and with great alacrity. Quickly she won the affection and appreciation of her in-laws, and as years rolled by, the couple was blessed with a son and two daughters. Lakshmamma, the mother-in-law, had a special love for Ishwaramma. Together they would perform the family rituals with enthusiasm and delight. Ishwaramma's simplicity, modesty and devotion impressed her mother-in-law greatly. And one day, Lakshmamma had a dream when she saw that something auspicious was about to happen in the life of her dear daughter-in-law. And so she told Ishwaramma not to be alarmed should anything unusual happen to her. In a few weeks, one morning, as Ishwaramma was preparing to draw water from the well, she saw a huge, strange blue ball of light simmering in the sky above. She had never seen anything like this before. She stood transfixed. Her eyes keenly followed this blue luminescence. And to her shock, this blue ball was descending towards her, and the next moment, even before she could realize what was happening, the blue glow had glided into her being. And totally dazed, Ishwaramma was knocked out. She fell to the floor. Let's pause the story here. Now, if you look at this episode, this entry of blue from the blue, wasn't this a clear clue of the limitless one arriving into a sacred closet to encase himself in flesh and blood? The color blue is in fact very symbolic. Bhagwan says, the color of infinity is blue, the sky is blue, the ocean is blue, Rama is depicted as blue, Krishna is described as deep blue. Blue is deep, it's mysterious, it signifies infinite love. Mr. Victor Kanu was an exemplary devotee of Bhagwan from Africa who came to Bhagwan for the first time in 1980. He was then working in London. 3 months before his departure, he saw Baba in his dream. Swami was in a red robe, but his face was blue. And Victor Kanu was worried. He thought Baba is not well. So he started sharing his dream with others and asking them what it meant. An SI devotee, Kirit Patel, told him, "Oh, well, Krishna was blue." And he showed him a picture of Krishna. Still, Victor was not convinced. On August 14, 1980, Victor and his wife finally were face to face with Bhagwan in Vrindavan, in Bhagwan's ashram in Bangalore, and Swami performed a spiritual marriage of the couple. He blessed them profusely and then he said, "Oh, you thought you would not come, and then I sent you a check." And now Victor was completely taken aback as Bhagwan told this, because that is exactly what had happened. He had no money to make the trip, and out of the blue, an English man who was not even his friend suddenly sent him money for two fares. Fares for both him and his wife, and so the money just came by post. And he says, "I remember that day I just ran upstairs with great joy to my wife and shouted, 'Look, honey, we have got the money. We have got the money to go to India. Let's go to Baba.'" And all this, you know, flashed in Victor's mind like a movie as Bhagwan told him, "Oh, you thought you will not come. See, I sent you the check." And then suddenly, as if remembering something significant, Victor said, "But Swami, your face was blue and I was worried." And when he said this, Bhagwan, in a most benign smile, looked at him with lot of love and said, "Ah, blue, deep, mysterious. Blue, deep, mysterious."
Neela megha shyamala ghana shyama sundara.
Shri 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 మందిరా
Meek Shyamala. That is what we are talking about. He is that beautiful blue complex and mysterious Lord. Just a year before, Mr. Victor Kanu had the deep blue mysterious experience. Another devotee from the Western Hemisphere, Dr. Frank Baranowski, had an incredible blue experience. Frank Baranowski is a professor in Arizona State University and an expert in aura photography. In the pictures of divine personalities, we often see an aura drawn around them, isn't it? It signifies their power and their positive influence. In fact, scientists believe that all living beings have an aura, but it is not visible to the human eye. But Dr. Frank Baranowski, for the first time, developed a technique by which these auras can be photographed. And this technique is called Kirlian photography. What is exceptional about Frank, however, is that he was blessed with the rare gift of seeing this aura of individuals directly with his own eyes. He did not need a camera. And he saw Bhagwan for the first time in his life in 1979 in Vrindavan. And he was so stunned with what he saw that he wanted to shout out from the hilltops about the good fortune mankind has been blessed with. And describing his experience to the students then, he said, "I have met over 100 holy men in India. Too many of these holy men are involved in their own personal egos. Their auras, therefore, show mostly concern for themselves and their institutions. And therefore, their auras are only about 25 centimeters broad and perhaps or sometimes 50 centimeters broad. I am not a devotee of Sai Baba. I came here as a scientist to see this man called Sai Baba. And I saw him on Sunday on the balcony giving darshan to devotees below. And the aura that Baba projected was not that of a man. The white was more than twice the size of any man's white. And the blue was practically limitless. And there was gold and silver bands beyond even the white and blue. You had this gold and silver bands and they were far beyond this building. They were right up to the horizon. They were just extending limitlessly. There is no scientific explanation for this phenomenon." And he went on to say, "I have given over 6,000 lectures in all parts of the world, but this is the first time, believe me, this is the first time my knees are shaking. The aura that emanates from Baba shows his love for you," he told the students. "I have met any number of holy men, but none of them have made themselves as available to you as Baba does. And this is a definite sign of greatness. Baba has given you the key to success, and the key to success is the simple four-lettered word, L-O-V-E, love. If ever I can use the phrase, love walking on two feet, it is here." In fact, I remember that is when love walking on two feet, the phrase came into vogue. It was Frank Baranowski who said this for the first time looking at aura of Bhagwan. In fact, he went on to say, the students explaining to them more about what he has seen, and he said, "I have been watching Baba while he was addressing you all. The pink aura that was manifesting was so vast and strong that it went even to the hall behind this chair. It filled the big hall. It embraced everyone here. And there can be no scientific explanation for this phenomenon. I have watched him for a week now as he walked among you morning and evening, and I have seen this aura, pink in color, go into the person he is talking to or the person he is touching. And this is because we draw on his energy. His energy seems to be limitless, like the blue horizon. It spreads everywhere and can be drawn upon by everyone around. An ordinary man will soon get exhausted going around as he does among so many because he's constantly only giving out. I have watched him come to a little girl in a wheelchair and tickle her. I was astounded at the aura of love that was all around Baba and that girl then. 2 days ago, right outside this hall, I looked into his eyes and they have a glow inside them. It is clear to me that I looked into the face of divinity. Again, there is no scientific explanation for this. And in fact, there should not be. In my estimation, Dr. Frank Baranowski said, he is exactly what he appears to be. He is love. That is what he is. Bhagwan's love is limitless. In fact, he himself once said, even the sky and ocean may have limits, but my love has no limits whatsoever. And this is exactly what was scientifically experienced by Dr. Frank Baranowski. And that is also perhaps the reason why the Lord announced his advent by gliding into the womb of Mother Isharama as a blue ball of light. Today we see the entire Prashant Nilayam covered with this divine hue of blue along with pink and yellow. No incident, an instance in the life of the avatar is without immense significance. If we go back to the story, Isharama told no one about her alien experience of a blue light from the sky merging into her as she was drawing water from the well. She confided this only with her mother-in-law, and both agreed to keep this as a secret because no one would believe such an occurrence. Besides, they may spread unnecessary tales. Soon Mother Isharama became pregnant, and as she neared the time for her delivery, another mysterious thing started happening. In the early hours of the morning, the different musical instruments present in the house, the tambura, the drums, they were magically self-creating beautiful and synchronous sounds. And Pedavenkamaraju was flabbergasted. He and his cousins have played on these instruments any number of times for village dramas, but how on earth are these playing on their own? Who are these invisible beings strumming their tamburas and beating their drums? And Pedavenkamaraju was terrified. This was such an unusual experience. And he was desperate for an explanation. He wanted an immediate solution. He thought it's a problem. So he discussed with many wise men around, and everyone was unsure, and their unsure theories only added to his misery. Finally, he met a venerated Shastri, a scholar in the adjacent village of Bukkapatnam. And after the Shastri heard Pedavenkamaraju completely, the learned one just became jubilant and he just exclaimed, "Why are you so disturbed? You should actually celebrate. These are auspicious signs. It signifies the presence of Shakti, a benevolent power that will confer joy and harmony on your family and on everyone around." This is what the Shastri said to Pedavenkamaraju, Bhagwan's father. Again, if we pause the story here and if we reflect, this is so interesting. Isn't it? Light, sound, and the avatar arrives. First the magnificent blue light, and then this mysterious motley of beautiful music. It was as if after seeing the descent of the light, the heavens were now singing and earth was rejoicing, and at the same time announcing to the world the advent of the source of all happiness. And isn't music the best way to welcome the Lord? Creation began with the sonorous sound of Om. Music is indeed the medium to herald the divine. Even on Baba's birthday celebrations, the day when we hail his coming every year, Swami would be welcomed amidst us through a variety of instruments. The birthday procession would have sounds from traditional Indian pipes and drums to Western band music. It would actually be so much music of so many kinds at the same time that you easily cannot discern one sound from the other. But overall, the vibrations it would create would be heavenly. It would just overwhelm and overpower our minds to silence and open our souls in preparation of the darshan of the Almighty. Perhaps this was also what was happening in Pedavenkamaraju's house in the third week of November 1926. He being an artist himself, so used to playing these instruments in various dramas, you know, it confounded him. But because he had never heard such sounds before, it was all otherworldly. It was as if a master musician was in action, and that's why he was stunned to silence and he wanted an explanation for this experience. but the words of that respected scholar, some way perhaps, opened his soul to prepare him for the exciting times ahead. If you go back to the story again, and so it was on November 23rd, 1926, Kartika Somavara day, the auspicious Monday in the holy lunar month of Kartika. Mondays in Hindu homes are earmarked for the worship of Lord Shiva, but the one in the month of Kartika is of special significance. This period is considered highly propitious for spiritual advancement. Besides, the name of the year according to the Telugu calendar was Akshaya, meaning never declining, ever full. Right from early hours in the morning, the entire village was consumed in chanting and worshipping the master of time, Lord Shiva. Ishwarama, of course, was busy too with her devotional offering to the Lord. She was immersed in the performance of a Satyanarayana Puja. And even as she was so engaged, at some point her labor pain started. But she was undeterred. She continued her ritual. Her mother-in-law too was no different. She had gone to the priest's house at 4 in the morning for a religious duty. When Ishwarama's delivery was imminent in a few moments, someone went over to Lakshmamma and informed her about the emergency. But she was too unshaken. She was determined to complete the worship and only then return home. She somehow was undoubtedly convinced that nothing would happen until she completed the ceremony and gave the prasadam to her daughter-in-law to partake. That was her indomitable faith. She was absolutely certain that Ishwarama would deliver only after she placed the sanctified flour and water in her mouth. And no wonder, that is exactly how it happened. Ishwarama partook the prasadam, and the divine himself manifested as a prasadam for all mankind. In Apastamba Sutra, in the clan of Apastamba, and in the Gotra, in the lineage of sage Bharadwaja.
Sagari nire sagani sagamadamare Sagari nire sagani sagamadamare Sagari nire sagani sagamadamare Bhartvajasagotramu
Thank you.
Bhardwaja lineage, the embodiment, the embodied form of all gods and belonging to the Ratnakara clan. You are Sai Baba. You are Sai Baba. You are the mighty, the almighty who protects all living beings. You are the truth manifested in Puttaparthi. His one word is worth of a crore pearls, and he certainly doesn't speak crores of glib words. Our Sai will not be pleased even if you bring flowers of all types and worship Him. But He will accept with all His heart, full of compassion, when we offer Him the Hridaya Pushpam, the lotus of our hearts. Our Sai is the one who confers eternal peace. He speaks wholeheartedly words which are suffused with love. He never indulges in empty rhetoric. He conducts Himself in accordance with His own reality. He cannot find faults in others. He is the one who does not know falsehood and cunningness. He considers all beings as His own reflections. You are Sai Baba. You are the one born in the Apastamba clan and Bharadwaja lineage, the embodied form of all gods and belonging to the Ratnakara clan. You are Sai Baba. You are Sai Baba. Again, if we ruminate on this special moment when Bhagwan emerged from the womb of Mother Isharamma, encased Himself in time and space, what occurs to me is, with little faith, one can go to heaven. But with great faith, heaven itself comes to us. And faith is to see the invisible, believe in the incredible, and experience the impossible. And everything impossible becomes impossible when we pray and persist with faith. We were discussing the story of Mr. Victor Kanu after he met Bhagwan for the first time. But there is a story prior to this. In 1978, Mr. Victor Kanu, originally from Sierra Leone, Africa, was the president of the Spiritualist Association of Great Britain. This organization was about communicating with the dead and transferring messages from them to the living to find solutions to people's problems and to help them heal. So it was the month of December and he was invited to a Christmas Eve service. And that evening, the woman priest there, Miss Rosa, gave an account of the birth of Jesus and His wonderful words and so on. And during her talk, she said, "Do you know there is a young man living in India today who is doing exactly what Jesus did 2,000 years ago, and his name is Sai Baba." So this is the first time Victor heard Bhagwan's name and he was simply excited. He says, "My heart jumped. A man on earth doing the same sort of things that Jesus did? I decided I needed to find out more about this man." And this was during the Christmas season. It was difficult to get more information because all the bookshops were closed. Finally, I came across the book Sai Baba, Man of Miracles by Howard Moffat. And when I turned its pages, I could not believe what I was reading. I would read this book during the weekends. Actually, all of 1978, every Sunday, I read this book cover to cover again and again. And then I got more books on Baba and learned that if you prayed to Him, He would hear you and He would respond. So one night in February 1980, I prayed to Him directly. This was about 11 p.m. With unquestionable sincerity, I said, "Oh Sai Baba, I do not know who you are, but from what I have read and what I have been told, I have no doubt whatsoever that you are indeed God incarnate. My wife and I have complete faith in you, and we would like to be your devotees, please. If you accept us, Baba, please give us a sign." These were His exact words. That night in February 1980, 11 p.m. And He says, "I prayed and I went to bed. And at 2:30 a.m. I woke up with a start. I was perspiring profusely. I was shivering. Something astounding had happened. In my dream, I had seen Sai Baba come into my healing room. He, in fact, sat on my healing table. And when I turned around to see Him clearly, I was just dazed. I did not know how to react. I instantly cried out, 'Oh God, help me. Oh Jesus, help me. Sai Baba, help me, help me.' It was too unexpected and too incredulous. I just opened my eyes instantly." It was such a shocking experience for him to actually see Swami come in his dream. And he was sitting on the healing table on which he used to sit every time to heal people. And Mr. Kanu therefore says, in other words, from 11 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. in those few hours, Sai Baba, whom I had asked to accept us as his devotees, responded immediately. This was my first call, and he came straight away. Of course, Victor Kanu, whom later Swami named as Victor Krishna Kanu, he had many mysterious experiences prior to this, but this was the first time he had reached out to Bhagwan with formidable faith. And when faith in us fortifies, divinity arrives. When faith fortifies, divinity arrives. And if there's a powerful lesson that Bhagwan was teaching us through his advent, it was this lesson of faith of Mother Isharama, of Mother Isharama's mother-in-law, Lakshmamma. They had complete faith that the Lord would grant them the blessing. They had complete faith in the ritual that they were doing, and they knew only after they are blessed the prasadam will Isharama deliver. And their faith was so strong that the Lord waited for that moment. And then the world was gifted with his presence. All spiritual endeavors begin with faith. In his birthday discourse in 1978, Swami said, "Faith is very essential for the pilgrim on the spiritual path. Man is now caught up in temporary and trivial preoccupations in this too short interval between birth and death, and he deceives himself by placing faith in these temporary occupations and temporary situations and temporary persons rather than on the truer and more lasting realities and experiences. He does not hold on to discrimination and deeper realities, and he is carried away by every gust of doubt or disappointment. The baby is calm and unaffected on the lap of the mother because it has mother, faith in the mother. The mother points out to someone as his father, to another as its grandpa, to another as its sister or brother, and the child accepts these statements without question. The mother creates the faith in the father for the child. So too, Bhagwan said, Mother Nature proclaims that there is a father who has designed and who is energizing and motivating these worlds, but man does not accept this because he has lost the capacity of faith. Faith is the basis of every act. You do not run away from the barber because he is armed with a sharp razor. You place faith in him and allow him to cut your hair, quietly submitting to his idiosyncrasies. You give away costly clothes to the laundry man since you have faith that he will return them washed and ironed. You have faith in the driver of your car, in the engineer who built your house. Bhagwan says, so too, believe in the inner motivator, the Atma within, the guiding force of your life. And Bhagwan went on to say in that discourse, that is the reason why one saint advised his followers, do not ask God for anything. Let him deal with you as he wills. And Bhagwan goes on to say, did Jatayu ask Rama to come to him and to perform the last rites? Did Shabari plead with Rama to come to him and be with her in her final moments? What they did, be it Jatayu or Shabari, is they earned the qualifications through their holiness, through their purity, through their faith. And Bhagwan said, once we have purity, faith, and that sacredness, then the Lord himself will approach us to console, to comfort, to protect us, to save us. Purity of heart and mastery over the senses, Bhagwan said, if you have these two credentials, grace is your right. You have it. That's it. And if there's anything that we need to cultivate, we need to endeavor to imbibe into us as we begin to celebrate this beautiful month, this sacred month, this holy month of November, is cultivating this purity and fortifying our faith. Because once we have this, Bhagwan says, grace is your right. You just have it. Let's strive to earn his grace. Let's strive to be instruments of his love. Let us purify our being to such an extent that we are just permeated with his grace. That his grace automatically flows to us ceaselessly, spontaneously, and there is nothing. That is an obstacle in this channel, in this medium of grace that flows from Him to us. Dear listeners, I thought as we begin this month of November, it's time we reevaluate ourselves and make this determination to walk on the path laid down by Him. His life is His message, and we have just taken one or two instances from His life, and there is so much to learn. Let us spend our time in imbibing these messages and making our lives His message. Thank you so much. It's time now to draw the curtains on this day-long Thursday life. I thank each one of you for being with us. If you have any queries or comments or suggestions, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. On behalf of all of us, the Radio Sai team, I offer my humble salutations at the lotus feet of Bhagwan for this beautiful, priceless opportunity of offering these programs at His lotus feet, for this opportunity of sharing His love, of reliving His presence in our lives. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.